Goofy, Garrett? Thanks for the nice introduction, Garrett, and thank you to the trio. I think we can all express our appreciation. Thank you, Garrett. This is a message about words. Sometimes words can kind of be, you know, playful. They can be communicate what you have on your mind. They can be express feelings of love. And every once in a while, they can express the very feelings in your heart. They can be reveal what you're thinking about or what you truly mean in your heart. That's the case of our passage today. We have three examples of what I call words from the heart. This story takes place in three acts. First act, goodbye. Act two, a visit from Mama. Act three, Solomon's dream. Act one, goodbye. Solomon is about to die. He's on his deathbed. He's lived a good life. He has done what he could in order to be on task with what the Lord had planned for his life. At least he did it pretty well, to the best of his ability. He made some mistakes, but he pretty much was on board with what God had planned for his life. And the scene is pretty common, right? People on their deathbed, asking for family to come and join them, asking that they may hear or provide some words of wisdom. And sometimes these words of wisdom become famous. Famous last words. Now, I've asked my associate, Will, to come to research this famous last words. And he has done extensive research, and I'd like him to come on up here and share with you some of his findings on famous last words.
Hello, everybody. I have spent my entire life on this research, and I have conducted minutes, maybe an hour, of research. So here we go. Groucho Marx, you all probably know who that is. He said, well, it's been noted that he turned to his wife on his deathbed and said, dying, don't worry, honey, that's the last thing I'll do. James D. French was an American criminal who was the last person executed under Oklahoma's death penalty laws. James D. French said this, how's this for your headline? French fries. General William Erskine, after he jumped out of a window and lives in Portugal. Now, why did I do that? Quote from a man that was stabbed to death. What are you going to do? Stab me? Oscar Wilde said, my wallpaper and I are fighting a duel to the death. One or the other of us has to go. I don't know who said this, but I thought it was funny, so I put it in here. What happens if we touch these two wires to get? Elvis Presley said, I'm going to the bathroom to read. And finally, Marie Antoinette. To the executioner when someone accidentally stepped on, or when she accidentally stepped on his foot. Pardon me, sir, I did not mean to do it on purpose.
Thank you, Will. So here's David on his deathbed, and he summons his son, Solomon. Now, Solomon at this time was king, and he had the word that was on David's mind was, who's going to be king, and who? What are they going to do? In other words, succession. Who is going to succeed me, and how can I somewhat assure that the plan that God had for my life will continue in Solomon's life? Now, it is equally important to consider in this act who he does not summon to his deathbed. He had other sons. One of them was Adonijah. Adonijah actually was older than Solomon. Adonijah was tall and strong and good-looking. Adonijah even had probably as good a claim to the throne as what Solomon did. And so thought Adonijah that he had as good a claim to the throne as what David did. And if we go back into chapter 1 of 1 Kings, we will find that Adonijah had a big party. He barbecued a couple of steers, had a big party, invited all his friends. He did not, however, invite Solomon and the prophet Nathan. And he made claims that he probably was going to be the new king. In fact, all the guests said to Adonijah, "Long live King Adonijah." Now, Bathsheba, Solomon's mother, got wind of this and was so troubled by it that she asked for an audience with the dying David. And she said, honey, remember? You had handpicked your son Solomon, my son also, Solomon, to be king. Do you remember that? And just as Bathsheba finished speaking, in comes the prophet Nathan. And the prophet Nathan says, "Don't you remember, David? We picked Solomon. Remember, you told us we were picking him for the king because he was wise, even though he's young, and he had a heart for you. Don't you remember these things?" And David said, "Yeah, I remember. I brought my whole court together, and I announced that my choice for king was Solomon." Right? Now, that didn't get out to all the people. So it makes sense that Adonijah thought that he could grab the throne if he got public sentiment with him. So David did this. He had Solomon crowned king before he died. Right? He sent a group of people together, and they had the swearing-in ceremony and the coronation, and Solomon became king. Now, when Adonijah heard this, he was pretty scared, right? Because he was calling himself king, and David had now made Solomon the king. So, that little weasel, he comes in and he falls on the feet of Solomon and says, "Solomon, Solomon, Solomon, you are the king, you are the man, and I'm with you 100%. And because of that, Solomon said, "Okay, if you're like that, that's fine. Make sure that you stay true to me and your life will be spared. In fact, it will prosper." Back to the story. David chose some words in order to give to Solomon. And some of them I had listed on the screen, but let's just review what David told Solomon. He said, things like, "Be strong in the Lord. Demonstrate your maturity. In other words, be personally prepared. Prepare yourself both physically, be strong, and in your mental or your maturity. Demonstrate your maturity. These are words that ring true to us. Be strong, be mature. Secondly, keep the charge of the Lord your God. God's plan for his life. Walk in his ways. In other words, honor God's directives. Now, what was God's directives? Well, God's directives started with Abraham. He chose a chosen people. They were the Jews. David had been chosen as king of the Jews. That was God's plan. And God's plan was to keep that succession in a man of Solomon. So, walk in his ways. This is the plan. This is the plan for your life. Keep it. Thirdly, keep his statutes and his ordinances and his testimonies. Honor God's directives. There had been writings and laws and customs that were important to the Jews. What David is reminding Solomon is, remember those directives. Remember those and honor those. Now, the why is the or why did Solomon have these directives? David says, so the Lord may carry out his promises, which he spoke to me. If your sons are careful in their ways and walk before me in truth with all their hearts and with all their souls, you will not lack a man on the throne of Israel. In other words, David was thinking, had one kind of last thought in terms of his plan, what he thought as what he perceived as God's plan for his life, and that was succession and getting Solomon to continue on with his ways. Act 2. A visit from Mama. This seems kind of innocent, right? Seems kind of innocent. Solomon is on the throne. David had put him, had given him the kingship before he died, and Solomon was on the throne. Now, he gets a call from Mama. And Mama says, Solomon's so proud of you. How about we do lunch? And Solomon says, sure. Let's do it. And the date is planned, and Mama comes to lunch. Now, being a good son, good Jewish son, he is completely respectful of his mom coming to visit. And so he arranges for a throne to be put in the throne room, and he brings her, ushers her in, probably gives her a crown, right? So it's just the two of them talking. Right? And if I had an equivalent, I would say that perhaps in royalty, it's kind of like the queen mother, right? She's not the queen anymore, but she's the mother of the king or so forth. And so it's kind of like the queen mother. So the queen mother comes in. Solomon gives her all the honors that are attributed to her. And he says, okay, what's on your mind? And she goes, you know what, Solomon, you're doing a great job. You're doing a really good job. But you know your brother Adonijah? I just talked to him the other day, and you know what? Funniest thing, he's found a girl and he wants to marry her. Really? Says Solomon. Yeah, no kidding. And he wants your blessing. Oh, all right, well, who's the girl? It's this girl called Abishag. Oh, time out. Time out. We have to know a little bit about this lady, Abishag. All right. Abishag was a had been in the Bible before, and it was relates to a specific problem that King David had in his last days on the throne. All right. It seems that King David had a little bit of a problem. He couldn't keep himself warm. Now, I know about this problem, not me personally, but my father-in-law cannot, and my mother-in-law cannot keep warm. And we have thermostat wars. Have anybody had those? All right. Now, on my side is my sister-in-law, Debbie. Now, Debbie has hot flashes, and she is always hot, right? I'm pretty hot, and here's my mother and father-in-law who are always cold. And so when we are on vacation together, it's thermostat wars. Dad will put the thermostat up to like 78, and we're hot and sweaty, and then we will wait till he goes to bed, and then we'll turn that temperature down to like 68, right? And then he'll get up in the morning and he'll go, "Who turned the thermostat down?" And Debbie and I all kind of look at each other and, "No, we don't do that." So I know about the problem. David is cold. Now, this is before the day of electric blankets. And the staff comes together and they have a little staff meeting and say, "What are we going to do if King's cold? Well, let's go find us a girl. We'll bring her in and put her in bed with the king." Now, I find this solution pretty interesting. Found this pretty interesting. So I consulted a couple of concordances about the practice, right? And I ran across the concordance according to Pat Ludkemeyer. And in that particular concordance, the author said, "It may have happened then, but it ain't going to happen now." So anyway, the Bible is pretty clear that the only thing that was transferred between the king and Abishag was body heat, right? Now, but that it gave the appearance, and this is important, it gave the appearance that Abishag was a wife of King David. And that's very important. Because when Adonijah asked for Abishag to be to marry Abishag, what he was really asking, what was down in his heart, is that make stronger the appearance that I could be king, that I am in line to be king, right? And remember that Solomon is the king. Abishag knows that, but creates this little story, if you will, this little drama in order to put another doubt in the people's mind of who is actually gonna be the king. Right? So, now, the other thing is that I'm not exactly sure about. I'm sure exactly Adonijah's, what that reveals about his heart when he asked Bathsheba to go see Solomon. I know exactly what he's going for. But I'm not exactly sure what Bathsheba is doing. She is the one that warned David about Adonijah. So I think what's going on is that Bathsheba just wants closer ties between the two brothers, perhaps. Better relations. I don't know. She may not have known about the custom that when a king is crowned, that king has the right to marry the wives of the past king. She might not know of that custom, but that's exactly what Adonijah is going for. He thinks that by marrying what the people perceive as a wife, then he has more right to the kingship. Now, this is actually after he has been told or has been shown that Solomon is the king. So, time in. Bathsheba asks Solomon for this simple little favor. Can your brother Adonijah marry Abishag? Well, Solomon is, he will ask for wisdom in the future, but right now he's still pretty wise. He gets it. And he says, I spared my brother before when he was acting like a king. He is now planning a full-fledged coup d'etat, and I've got to stop it. And so he summons his generals, and they go get Adonijah, and they go get Joab, and they go get everybody that's associated, and they kill him. All the rivals. What's important about this is not the words of Bathsheba, but the words of Adonijah, revealing in his heart that I can still be king if I plot some kind of a rebellion like this. Act 3, Solomon's dream. Now, Adonijah is dead. There is no more rivals to the throne. And it is just Solomon. He's firmly implanted on the throne. And his first act is that he finds a girl to marry. It happens that the girl is the daughter of the king of Egypt. Now, this is pretty strategic in that now Egypt and Israel will be at peace throughout the time of Solomon's reign. So it was pretty strategic. So Solomon has demonstrated already his beginning levels of wisdom. He's figured out the plot of Adonijah. He's figured out politically how to make peace with his neighbors. And he is given this revelation from God. God asks him, "What can I do for you?" Well, let's think of the options. What could he say? I could ask for wealth. I could ask for fame. I could ask for anything I wanted to. But here's the problem. He's just young. He is probably, 20 years old. He's got a new wife. He's got a new job. And the directives of his father, the king, he has carried out. Those were very mature kinds of things to do. However, dad's gone now. Now what happens? Well, he could see that the job was huge, as Chris alluded to. The job was huge. And if he was going to do a good job, he needed one thing. And that was maturity and wisdom. Sound judgment. And so he asked the Lord for wisdom. Sound judgment. Now, instead of just defining wisdom, I can tell you what it's like. And you knew that you would get a little physiology lesson. You couldn't escape without a little physiology lesson. So here it is. There are reflexes that control the body. One that you know about a lot, or control mechanisms, is feedback, right? Let's say that you're hot and the body employs feedback mechanisms and you do things like vasodilate and you get into the air conditioning. You do things, sweat, right? Kate's helping me out here. You sweat, you do things, you employed feedback mechanisms that will help to bring the original challenge to the physiology back in line, right? Well, there's another mechanism, and it's called feed forward. Feed forward mechanisms are anticipatory control mechanisms. In other words, let's go the other direction with temperature and let's go cold. Now, in January, when you open the door and you walk that first, take that first step outside, it's cold, right? You feel it. The skin feels cold. Now, is your body temperature cold yet? Not at all. Your body temperature is still warm, but through many experiences, the body can anticipate that because I'm going into the cold, that I bet you, this is the body talking, I bet you that my body temperature is going to drop. And so it anticipates, the body anticipates that before your actual body temperature goes down. And it employs mechanisms like shivering and vasoconstriction, all of those things that will try to keep you warm. Another one is food in the GI tract. The sight and smell of food, before you ever taste that food, will cause changes in your GI tract that will anticipate that food is coming. Right? You will already start to produce hydrochloric acid in your stomach in preparation for that meal that is coming. You will already increase gastric motility so that you anticipate that food coming. Those are responses. They are physiological responses that are developed from a very long period of time of which the body figures out that we are better off if we anticipate those responses and we can kind of ward off those challenges. That's feed forward. And what I am suggesting to you that is what wisdom is like. It is the ability to predict what's going to happen if certain things come to pass and anticipate that and employ mechanisms to control what's going on before they happen. It's an anticipation that things could go south very quickly unless I do something. This is what Solomon is asking for, that kind of wisdom. And as you remember, after the Lord gives him that wisdom, and I don't think that it happened all at once. What I kind of think is that when you ask that, the Lord will put in your place situations of which you will grow in wisdom. So at the end of a long period of time, you will be very, very wise. I'm going to give you wisdom I'm going to provide situations for you to help you develop wisdom. And one of those situations happens right after that. Two women come to Solomon, again, and he's in his new job. He's got people coming, and he's got to be the judge. He's young and so forth. Two women come to him and say, hey, this is my child. The other woman says, hey, this is my child. The other woman says, hey, this is my child. She is lying. And the other one says, no, she is lying. This is my child. Now, Solomon, even though he is young, employs what I say is wisdom, and he anticipates that the real mother, their first priority is the safety of the child. He is banking on that. And so he creates a situation in which that is tested. Now, does he know 100% that that will happen, that the real mother will show herself in that way? No. Right? Sometimes being wise doesn't work out, but in this particular case, it does. And he says, okay, both of you have claim to the child, we'll just split the child in half. Each of you can have half. The real mother does exactly what Solomon thinks she's going to do and says, the safety of the child is more important to me than me raising that child. Give the other woman the child. At least it will live. And Solomon recognizes that that's the true mother. And gives the child to what he now knows is the real mother. Let's summarize. What can we learn from this lesson? What I'm suggesting to you is this. There are some times when words, even a sentence, reveals the true nature of our hearts. Parents, make sure that you know, your children know what these words are and they have been spoken. Right? So your kids know what's truly on your hearts. Second of all, children, if you don't know that, ask your mom and dad, what's truly important to you? Right? How can I succeed you when you're gone? Second of all, Adonijah's revealing of his heart was pretty cold, right? He was still trying to overthrow Solomon's rule. That was against God's plan. Make sure that your what's down in your heart is in keeping with God's plan for your life. And third, even though God gave Solomon wisdom, I don't think he used it all up. And just as God was very pleased with Solomon for asking for wisdom, I just bet you that he will be pleased with you if you ask for further wisdom. Right? And I bet you he will give it to you. So as the band comes back up to do their final songs, I just want to reflect on those things, what we've learned today about the succession of power and the gift of wisdom. It reflects what we really have in our hearts, what we truly have in our hearts. Sometimes words do that. And so I ask again, what are the words that you would say? What is the words that you're saying say about your hearts? Amen.